Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Welcoming to the show this morning, Executive Director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents, Fran Rabinowitz, kicking off our Back to School series this week. Good morning, Fran. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
So, Fran, we know teachers, administrators are back this week. Kids, for the most part, go back next week. What would you say some of the biggest changes from last year adjusting to COVID and now this year? It seems like most schools are in person. That's one of the biggest things I'm noticing.
Absolutely. Every school that I know of, K-12, is coming back in person. And all I can say is, everyone that I talk to is so excited just to be back to person and seeing all of their students in person.
And I know there are some towns right off the top of mind is Fairfield that are fighting to have some virtual classes offered if their kids are immunocompromised or they feel that they are not as safe in school, even with the masks. Do you think that, especially with the Delta variant, virtual classes will come back in some capacity this fall?
Well, I think, number one, I'm thrilled that the governor mandated mask wearing across the state. I think that was something we were hoping for because it's one of the most effective mitigating strategies aside from vaccinations. I do think that schools right now will be opening with some virtual for students that are medically compromised, in some cases, family members who are medically compromised. And hopefully we won't have a lot of students in quarantine, but it may come back for students in quarantine. The legislature said that remote learning for 180 days in K-12 is not allowed this year. We're all doing a lot of study of remote learning, and we hope that there will be standards for remote learning and that districts will be able to offer remote learning or virtual learning at the high school level beginning with the 22-23 school year.
We're talking to Fran Rabinowitz this morning, Executive Director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. Speaking of the mask mandate from the governor, that's taking us to at least September 30th. It could extend. We're not sure. Do you think it's contradictory, though, Fran, that we have kids in every district required to wear their masks when a lot of towns and cities haven't even decided to bring back the mask mandate in general for indoor public spaces?
Well, I do think that for our students, we have large numbers of students up to age 12 who are not able to be vaccinated yet. And we're in close quarters, if you will, in classrooms with, 20, 25, hopefully not 30, but in some cases 30 students over, 5 or 6 hours. I do think it was incredibly important to have all of the mitigating strategies in place.
I'm curious, Fran, when it comes to the masks, I know there's a group of residents in Connecticut. I'm sure you've heard of the movement Unmask Our Kids. But one of the biggest things that they talk about is, that the flu is still among kids could be deadlier than COVID in past data. And we never forced children to wear masks when we were dealing with the flu or really anything else. Do you think that masks in general, especially once COVID does get under control, hopefully, do you think masks will be required for things like flu, or do you think COVID's just a different animal, essentially?
That's a really interesting point. I don't know. I mean, I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a health person. I'm an educator. But I do think I have not heard that discussed yet by the Department of Public Health. But let's see what happens. I can only speak for myself. I have very young grandchildren, and it seemed as though when we dropped the masks in, late spring and into the summer, all of a sudden they had colds and stomach viruses, mm-hmm. which they had not had before. Mm-hmm. And so I really began to see the benefits of masks. Do I want them all the time in schools? I don't think so. No. But, you know, that I would take direction from the health professionals.
Do you worry about, Fran, masks with, there's always the younger kids, the disruption of learning, you know, so we're talking like pre-K, kindergarten, even first grade, when they're learning to speak and being able to read what their teacher is saying and being able to see each other's mouths and their expressions. That's always been a concern for parents as well with the masks. Do you feel that kids are falling behind because of the masks?
I feel that I really need some data from remote learning, because I did worry, generally speaking, that my greatest worry was about the preschool and the very young children, especially those children learning to read. But that was on remote. I am not convinced that children being in the presence of a teacher and a vaccinated teacher has the ability, when they're doing direct teaching of students, to take off their masks if they choose. I do believe that it's a very different experience being in person, and I don't think the masks will interfere.
Fran Rabinowitz is here, the executive director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. What about teacher shortages and bus driver shortages, Fran? We've been hearing a lot of that because of COVID in the last year and a half.
I'm very concerned about that, frankly. And I spoke to the superintendents in Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven, and they are equally concerned, as are other districts. I was on in the eastern part of the state with 25 superintendents. I asked how many are fully staffed, and only 3 raised their hand. So do I think it is an issue? Yes. I think we're talking about it. We don't have any absolute solutions, but we do believe it's an issue. I'm especially concerned in the area of special education and support services, because I do believe we have IEP, individual education program responsibilities for our students. And we also know that our students will probably come back with some social and emotional issues that we need to deal with. They've been through a lot. And so I worry about the availability of special ed teachers and support services.
Last question, in regards to your concern with the shortage of teachers that we were just talking about, are you worried then about the vaccine mandate? Well, I personally agree with, you know, healthcare workers, teachers, people who are going to be exposed to a lot of people at one time. I understand the need to have teachers vaccinated, but do you think the mandate is now going to turn teachers away?
No, I don't. Actually, I did a survey of all of the superintendents early last week, and certainly in many districts, they were over 95% of teachers and administrators were vaccinated.
Oh, really? Wow.
If you look at school staff as a whole, we're probably somewhere around 70 to 75%. And with this mandate, there is also the ability to test every week if you are not vaccinated. So I think that I do not believe, and this is not just my belief. I checked in with superintendents. They don't believe they will lose staff due to vaccination mandates.
And another thing that actually just popped in my head, Fran, sorry to keep you longer, but I know a couple of friends of mine actually have spouses who are teachers, and they're finding what's hard is a lot of districts are doing these like 1-year contract deals. And it's kind of turning them away because it's not feeling like they are settling somewhere. A lot of them are finding in a lot of our districts that they're being offered 1-year contracts, which is very unsettling for them. And I just wasn't sure if that also could be contributing to the teacher shortage.
Well, that's interesting. I do know that, certainly for your long-term staff and your openings within your general budget, you would be offering regular contracts. My guess is that there are districts offering contracts in keeping with the ESSER dollars, the ESSER funding, which is coming from the federal government, which ends in 2024. They may have some concerns about being able to continue to fund the positions. I would hope that those would be like extra positions, not a classroom teacher or that type of thing. And I think in many districts, what they're hoping is that there will be additional funding so that they will not have to let those new professionals go. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you they're also being very upfront and honest that, you know, this funding has a funding cliff in 2024. If we lose the funding, we may not be able to continue to pay you.
Mm-hmm. Fran, is there a place where if people are interested in looking at maybe a district to go and apply for, if they don't know that there are shortages in certain areas, is there a way that they can go to look at jobs that are open?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly can look at individual districts on their website. Just about every district advertises and tells you how to apply. There is also a statewide website called REAP, R-E-A-P. I don't know if it's REAP.org or REAP.com, but that's another place where many districts advertise.
Okay. Fran Rabinowitz, again, the Executive Director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents, thank you so much for coming on this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely.
She's visiting our part of Connecticut today. Melissa in the Morning checks in with Lieutenant Governor Susan Bysiewicz now on WICC 600.
Yeah, the Lieutenant Governor is actually going to be in Bristol this morning, right as our show is wrapping up, talking to Connecticut residents about being aware of still the flood risks following Tropical Storm Henri. And she's here this morning. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor Susan Bysiewicz. How are you?
Very good and very pleased that we dodged a bullet yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, fortunately, Storm Henri moved off to the east and we did not get the direct hit that we thought we were going to. And the winds were less. The power outages were hundreds of thousands less than mm-hmm. originally anticipated. So right now we have about 7,800 people without power, and those folks are in the eastern part of the state.
So as you mentioned, Lieutenant Governor, that this was certainly a different storm than what we saw August of last year, where we had hundreds of thousands out for many, many days. And I know the governor recently said, look, it's too early for us to start praising our utility companies. But as of this morning, how are you kind of feeling about the response? My understanding is Eversource, for example, brought in crews from Florida and Texas and Canada just to make sure we had the manpower needed to handle the storm that was coming this weekend.
Yes, that's right. Well, we were anticipating the day before that we would be facing a level one hurricane, which is, you know, the most powerful. And what we had yesterday was about 50,000 homes that were out of power. And we peaked at any one time at 32,000 households without power. And now, as I mentioned, we've gotten down to 7,800, which the CEO of Eversource, who has that whole area of eastern Connecticut, has said that within a day or so, all of those homes should be back online. I think that because of the Take Back Our Grid Act that the legislature passed, and because of our regulatory authority, PURA, putting in much stricter controls and expectations on the utilities, we were much more prepared and ready for the storm. So I think it was a combination of two things, Melissa. It was the utilities are required to do more to prepare and make sure they have enough crews on the ground. Mm-hmm. And second, the storm moved away from us, and so we had less of a direct hit. So I think it was a combination of both of those things. I will say that it was really nice to, number one, know that Joe Nolan, who is the CEO of Eversource, was in Connecticut a couple of days before the storm. I talked to him before the storm hit. And the governor and I spoke with him during the storm, and he assured us yesterday that, the rest of the outages will be taken care of in the next day or two. So we think that the utilities did do a better job. As a matter of fact, because Rhode Island was hit harder than us, mm-hmm. some of the out-of-state crews were directed by the utilities to go to Rhode Island.
And we're talking this morning to Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz in the aftermath. I know we're still technically, Andre is still kind of lingering, but in the aftermath of what we thought was going to be disastrous yesterday and how it kind of dodged us. Lieutenant Governor, I'm just curious, with Eversource, for example, or even UI, when you talk about, the outages, if you compare Isaias to Andre, obviously two totally different storms. But I am curious, did we have better communication? Because during Isaias, at least here in Fairfield and New Haven counties, most of our local leaders said that was their biggest downfall. They could deal with almost seeing outages for a few days. It was the lack of communication that really bothered them, and many of them actually spoke out against the utilities when PURA had their investigation. Do you think that they did a better job, at least like in the Hartford area, where we really saw more of the flooding and more of the downed trees and power outages?
I think that the utilities got that message from PURA and the legislature loud and clear. And so going into the storm, every municipal leader had the name of their liaison. And many of the cities and towns that opened emergency operations centers had their Eversource or UI liaison right in the emergency operations center. And throughout the storm, the governor and I were talking to municipal leaders that had the most power outages, and they were reporting to us that, they were either talking directly to their liaison or emailing or texting them. So I think that was really important. And again, that was part of PURA and the legislature's requirements that the utilities provide those community liaisons. And so we were pleased that that part also was going well during the storm. I do want to say, Melissa, that people should be careful about standing water and flooding today. We are expecting thunderstorms and more rain today, and our ground is so full of water already that we need to be very careful. We were worried about urban flooding in Bridgeport, mm-hmm. in Stamford, in our cities yesterday, because in urban areas there's no ground, there's just asphalt, so the water just sits. Mm-hmm. So do be careful if you're out driving and you see standing water, don't drive through it. And also for our swimming areas, we've asked people to avoid swimming in recreational areas for 72 hours because some sewage overflows have occurred and we're concerned about bacteria from untreated sewage waters that may have been discharged by excess rain. So be careful about swimming and be careful about standing waters and flooding from thunderstorms that we may get today.
Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz, thank you so much for the update this morning, and thanks for tracking the storm and helping us out this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Always a pleasure to have you on. A lot of times, couples who feel they have a very strong marriage will think, an affair? Psh! It's not going to happen to me. But apparently, Bob Donovan, our marriage consultant, says that is a complete myth. Why, Bob? Why is that a myth? I would think that's kind of ironic to say you have a strong marriage and an affair would never come by. Like, why is that a myth?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, hopefully that's true, right? Hopefully that couple does have a strong and healthy marriage. That is true. However, if you just look at data, there's plenty of studies out there that 50 to 60% of couples experience infidelity at some point. So it's out there and it's real and it can happen. And the funny part is, as I was preparing for this talk today, I was with somebody, a guy on Friday morning, and he had an affair several years ago. And I was just probing the origins of that. Tell me what happened there. And the first thing he said, I never thought it would happen to me. And I think the first lesson I draw from this is that that's a myth. If you think it can't happen to me, you're kind of buying into a lie that you're above it. You know, and you and Derek do this well, you got to balance safeguards and trust, right? You can't have this total, you know, checking on phones all the time and email. You can't do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to have that ability to do that when you need it. You need to have that trust. But having an attitude that it can happen to me is really buying into a false sense of security, and you might let your guard down.
I mean, it's like anything in life, Bob. We always think, oh, it's never going to happen to me, and then God forbid it does actually happen to you, you know, with anything in life. So it does make sense to not buy into that lie as well. I want to kind of go back, though, to a word that you used, infidelity. I think immediately you always think sex. I'm just going to put it out there. But is that necessarily what you're talking about?
No, actually, no. I'm glad you brought that up because it could be certainly physical, but wow, what I'm seeing more often is more emotional affairs.
What is that?
I'm seeing that, which also is that's infidelity, right? In fact, I'd say to couples, you know, have a conversation about what infidelity means for you. Is it texting in an intimate language? Is it emails to somebody that's not appropriate? If it's Facebook. Old relationships. I mean, each couple should have a conversation about what infidelity means in their relationship. Because you're right, it's not just physical. Actually, the emotional ones I have found to be harder to repair. It mm-hmm. really is. So, mm-hmm. you know, that is a key point you brought up.
Well, because I would think, Bob, and correct me if I'm wrong, but with emotional, it feels like you just don't trust me as a person. It's not even that you're not attracted to me. It's that you don't trust to come to me with your vulnerabilities. That's very painful.
Yeah, it is. And again, there was a couple recently I worked with that was dealing with this, and he had an emotional affair with somebody, never got physical. And he couldn't understand why his wife was devastated.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't understand that because to a woman's heart, that is – I mean, that really is difficult to overcome. So that is something that you have to be aware of as well.
Bob Donovan's here, our marriage consultant. And you know, you talk about, Bob, paying very close attention to the line. What does that mean?
Yeah. So as I research this and read about it, like people that have analyzed affairs almost to a person talk about a line they crossed.
Mm-hmm.
There is this line you cross, whether it's a coworker that you're getting close to, that the conversation moves from professional slowly into the personal, whether it's texting that starts with, again, kind of a friendly tone that again, transitions more intimacy. So there is always this line. And the funny thing is, you know it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, like, your gut.
You can't define
yep.
it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're in that conversation and it goes to the next level, whether it's, you know, the time you express feelings, whatever it is, like, I guarantee you know that you're close to it or you just crossed it. There is always a line in these situations.
Mm-hmm. And knowing your enemy, the affair, what do you mean by saying that?
Yeah, this is a really hard one. I mean, it talks about kind of being incredibly brutally honest with yourself. Know your risk areas. Know when you're tempted. Know when you're tired. Again, know when you're your past history, when you've either had issues or come close to issue. I call them close calls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody's had close calls.
Oh,
so
sure.
Understanding when those things have happened and when they might happen are really important to do that. You know, if your parents had infidelity or affairs, like you kind of, that's another aspect of this. So there is kind of a self-awareness that's required when you're looking at this topic.
So wait, that's really interesting, Bob. So if you yourself didn't have a history of infidelity, but somebody close to you that you know or someone that you love did, that even if you feel like I'm totally against that, that's actually something that you should really take into consideration?
You should pay attention to that, right? Because there's something in that relationship that it's a parent or a friend or something that you observed. So again, I think that's just another area to be aware of, that could be a risk area. Mm-hmm. Actually, many times it works the opposite, where, you know, if it's a parent, the man or the woman will say that I never want that to happen to me. So, mm-hmm. you know, that can't be both ways. But I think a person needs to be aware of kind of their personal risk areas. And we all know where they are. Mm-hmm. Like, you know where yours are. I know where mine are. Like, we all know where they are. We just often don't want to stand up and look at that.
True. And I love this next point, Bob Donovan, our marriage consultant. The grass is never greener. It's so, so true in just so many facets of life, but certainly with infidelity and in affairs, for sure.
Yep. And you know this, right? I mean, you have a dog and a young son. I had three kids close together, and like life's just crazy. Like, you have laundry, you have, you know, cleaning up the house, taking out the garbage, and, you know, it just can get kind of routine sometimes. And if there's somebody out there that's paying attention to you, or again, you know, getting close to that line or having these conversations, you tend to idealize or romanticize that person. Mm-hmm. You're actually looking at a fake person. In your mind, you're thinking, you know, they're perfect, or they're doing this, or they're doing that. You know, we kind of buy into, and then people have gone down this road. The grass is not greener. They just think it is because they're envisioning a romanticized or fantasy image of somebody. But it never is. It never is.
Yeah, in that moment, it feels like it's everything you've been waiting for. And, you know, and Bob has more tips on how to invest to have a healthier marriage, to avoid things like the line and things like that. Bob, how can people reach out to you if they want help on this?
Yep. The best way is through email on bdonovan, D-O-N-O-V-A-N, @blackrock.org.
Bob, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, Melissa.
Thanks, Bob.